Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth, as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service based out of Spokane, Washington. We've been in business for over two decades. We've really worked hard to be the best of the best. I was just talking with Mike downstairs, and I said, you know, how do you think we got to where we're at? I mean, you see, if you know much about the coin business, there are usually you see kind of little shacks around. They're kind of like little pawn shoppy, low budget. We built an empire, and we did it by the high volume, low margin philosophy, by honesty, integrity, and professionalism, and by knowing what we're doing. It helped that I had a really strong business background in banking and had spent a lot of time analyzing and, you know, working with businesses, and I knew what it took. It's black and white. Time is money. Things like that. You know, you can't, you get into these large bloated corporations and they'll oftentimes, you know, they're publicly traded. You'll never see it in a privately held corporation, but you'll get this employee bloat where they bloviate. They just spend a lot of time doing nothing. I've worked in a few of those jobs, and it drives me nuts to sit there and have nothing to do. We pay our people well. We take good care of them. But at the same time, we require, you know, performance and efficiency and all that. But we're also operating from a biblical perspective, you know, that you work as unto the Lord. You're doing your best. You're exercising your talents. You're using your skill sets. But you're also understanding, you know, mentorship, or, you know, learning from others is iron sharpens iron, I guess. And that's the nature of this business, is it's a constant honing and tuning and learning. And I mean, I've told people, they'll say, what's it take to get into the coin business? I say, it's a series of PhDs. I've had people say, you know, I'm getting that, you know, that part of the job down, or, you know, I'm getting pretty good out at the counter, or I'm getting it down or whatever, you know. And I'll be like, well, that, in my mind, I'm like, well, that's funny. I've been doing this, you know, 25 years, and I'm still learning every time I walk out there. But you know, we're good at it. We appreciate our customers. We love our customers. They mean the world to us. They're our friends. And we really appreciate the business. We appreciate the loyalty. It matters. When you own a small business, folks, you know, how many small businesses have been utterly eradicated by the Amazons and the Costcos and the Walmarts and the Walgreens and the Wincos? And, you know, they're gone. I mean, they're gone, gone, gone. It is such an incredibly different world than I, quote, grew up in. It's baffling to me. It's concerning. You know, when you study history and you hear about all these, you know, anti-monopoly moves of separating Bell Telephone into Southwest Bell and whatever they were, and AT&T, which is now. And then you look at Amazon. I mean, you look at Amazon and Google. I mean, these companies are absolute, complete, total conduits of free speech, and they are controlling it at a level. I actually got censored recently by Facebook. And I wrote a message in support of Matt Shea. Not even in the slightest offensive to the left, of course, which everything is. That's the new thing. But nothing. I did use the word Nazis. I said they call us Nazis, but they don't understand what they mean when they say that, or they don't understand what a Nazi is, or whatever. So that's what I think got me censored. I dared use the N-word, not the other N-word, the Nazi N-word. I mean, it's crazy. It's like freedom of speech. Where did you go? And I'm always, you know, tight on time, and this is kind of a weird show. I mean, tomorrow night is Christmas Eve, right? Or Christmas Eve. How about New Year's Eve? We're moving into 2020. Think of the significance of those numbers. What is 2020? Clear vision, perfect vision, right? We're moving into the year of perfect vision. which is kind of interesting when I think about it, you know, and I mean, obviously, that's our man-made definition of perfect vision, but when someone said to me the other day something about 20/20, I'm like, what? I thought they were talking about someone's vision, and I'm like, oh, yeah, next year's 20/20. But you know what else they say? Hindsight is 20/20. And now we can look back and at the changes in our nation. You know, not just, I mean, this year, folks, we had, you know, historical activity this year with our president and this impeachment farce and the lies. Are you serious? The stuff that we've been through? I mean, the stuff that we're doing. And, you know, I know it's like, oh, it's politics. Oh, don't harp on it, you know. And I struggle with that a lot. But at the same time, I'm like, it's politics, you know. It's America. It's the world. As goes the U.S., so goes the world. When you talk to people who are in the State Department, and I've done this, I believe me, God has given me one of the most wonderful journey lives you could ever imagine. I trip over people you can't even believe. We just have a magnet for that stuff. Even, you know, my wife was picking up a puppy for me at the Seattle airport and ended up in the caravan with the San Francisco 49ers in a blacked out Suburban carrying her puppy to the other airport. You know, it's just like, God just does this, you know, it's just crazy. It's interesting, but you know, so what I'm getting at is I know people. I've talked to people at levels that matter, you know, that really tell you, and they don't think like we do, folks. They don't think like the media thinks you think. They don't think that way at all. There's so many people that know we're so screwed up. And what's weird is those who are anti-Trump are just filled with vitriol. They hate our president more than they love our country. And that, to me, is a huge, huge thing. That's America. That's who we are at our core. This lovely computer, I need to get a new one. I know you don't need to hear all that, but it's nice. So, you know, the left, I'm ending the year on this political note. But, I mean, if we've ever lived, right, in a political era, wouldn't that be now? I mean, if there's ever been a political time, wouldn't that be now? Do you know, guess how many presidents have been impeached throughout history, okay? I'm going to take you through them. You got Bill Clinton in 1998. And then you got President Richard Nixon. Just kidding. People think Nixon was impeached. Wrong. He resigned before he was impeached. Before the 98 impeachment of Clinton, was the only other impeachment was Andrew Johnson, 1867. Okay. After the Civil War, major, major division in this nation, major division in views. Just because one side won doesn't mean the views automatically shifted over. I think you'd probably agree with that, right? It just doesn't work that way. So, you know, they were having huge. And here's the thing. Clinton was impeached, I think, at 58% with obvious criminal charges. Andrew Johnson was impeached at 76 or 78%. So that was a majority. That was a very non-political impeachment. And in each case, those cases, they listed off specific crimes, okay? High crimes and misdemeanors, as our Constitution states. They listed them off. Trump, a bunch of political innuendo. His impeachment was passed by 53%. 53%. And if you look, what's different with all those three, if you look down the party line, there is not one Republican vote to impeach Trump. And I'm telling you, you know, that's something they maybe should have put in the Constitution, too. And then she's holding back the, quote, articles of impeachment, which are garbage, from the Senate because she's afraid she won't get a fair trial. Like, oh, wow. First of all, then they want to confuse everybody and make everybody think that this is a court of law. It's a court of politics, and it's an absolute farce. If you saw what they did in the congressional, you know, lynching, you'd see it was terrible. But these are not good times for America. Let's hope that this is God's way of refining us. Think again, Donald Trump. Trump means final overriding factor or resource. God may be refining this nation at this point, cleaning it up, bringing our filth to the surface. How about that? That's a good thing. Isn't that what we need, kind of? Good fascism. If and when fascism comes to America, it's not going to arrive, you know, with military. That's the thing. When I was growing up, I remember college talking to people, older folks, they'd say, this country will not be overthrown from the outside. We're going to be overthrown from the inside. And I remember thinking, yeah, right. Boy, did they know what they were talking about, and I didn't. So, because when fascism actually comes to America, which is crazy, because the anti-fascist Antifa, where the cowards wear masks and bring weapons and beat people up, and then the cowardly cops in these liberal cities won't defend the innocent American protesters. They defend these violent rioters because these liberal whack job mayors are losing their cookies. Maybe Trump's, you know, God's litmus test. You know, maybe he's out there trying to reveal the truth about people. But when fascism comes to America, if it does, and it may, it won't arrive with military arms and uniforms. To the modern progressives, you have to understand this. The term progressive means constant change. And I have discussed in the past what God says about change in Proverbs, I think, 24 or something like that? Where he says, he's telling his son, Rehoboam at the time, who ended up being a flopper, he's telling him, do not hang out, basically, with people who are given to change. And then we talked about the left and the right being spiritual, not just what we say it is politically, but literally, you know, it's a spiritual thing. God set Jesus on the right hand. And we've talked about the left or the right. And when we go into Congress and you come down the hall, or you come into the congressional hall, which we've been there, it's literally separated with the left being the liberal side, the right being the conservative side. I've written that on things and had people say, well, it depends on your perspective. It depends on where you're at. Okay. Well, let's take that argument and say, okay, you're coming into the congressional hall, the halls of Congress, the House, right? You're coming in. You're going to sit down. Okay. Which side is right and left? It's as you're facing the stage, right? Would you, first of all, how many of you are going to be on the stage? None. Okay. You're visitors. You're not going there. Even the congressman and everything. It's just the whole system. It's obvious. Anytime you refer to an auditorium or stadium or anything, you refer to it from the back looking forward. That's the design. You're designed to look forward. That's just normal. And so it's not a matter of perspective that way at all. It's an absolute matter of truth. It's the way God wrote it, the way he made it, and the way it is. And so I think we need to realize that the left, the socialists, all this stuff, God foreknew all this stuff long before it ever came and started to haunt our lives. He was well aware of it. He knew it was coming, you know, and so he laid that all out for us and made it very clear that, you know, right is right and left ain't. And some people don't like that a whole heck of a lot, but that's just too bad, I guess, because it is what it is. I'm trying to find some scripture here, and my computer's not being my very good friend, so maybe it's just not a day for that. So I'll go back to, we'll just talk about fascism. So we've got, you know, to modern progressives, which means change, and the Bible tells us to avoid those who are subject to change, who desire constant change. He tells us specifically to avoid that. okay? And there's a good reason, because change is the weapon of the devil. Now, there's good change called technology, and that can be used wrong too, right? But there's good change that improves society, and then there's change in thought and thinking, change in tradition. You know, and you look at like the traditional Jews, okay, they're not changing, okay? And people look at that and say, you know, that doesn't look too impressive to me. I'm not real interested in that lifestyle, you know, where they've got the hair growing down the sides of their head because they won't cut it and all that. But I'll tell you what, the thing about it is that they at least are an anchor or a compass for society. We know that what they believe, and honestly, I've talked to a lot of people that there are a lot of morality issues in the Orthodox Jewish stuff. They tend to lean that way, but it doesn't. But we still know what they believe in, and we know what they stand for, and we know what truth is. And it's funny that no matter who you speak with, you will find that people know what truth is. They'll tell Christians, non-Christians the same. That's wrong, that's right. You'll argue with them and they'll say, oh, there's no right or wrong or whatever, but there is. There is right or wrong in a big, big way. And we've seen that come down. So anyway, the modern progressives, to the progressives, everything is fluid. Everything's debatable. Everything's negotiable. This is why we've seen this stuff happening in Congress and the Senate and all these crazy activities, these crazy motions. Because they believe everything's fluid. And so that's the progressive mindset, to progressively change, to never stop, to be enforced. To modern progressive, laws are fluid and only to be enforced when they champion the good. In other words, their perception of good. And that laws are to be ignored or subverted when they empower the bad. Okay, so I love it when you get Beto O'Rourke and these people running for office that'll say, you know, border laws are just, they're not relevant. And these people aren't breaking the law. They're just trying to save their families. And we don't need to obey the law down there. And in the same conversation, they'll say, we need to take away everybody's guns. And people say, what do you do if they won't give them up? Oh, we're going to enforce the law. We're going to make a law and then we're going to enforce the law. People will honor the law. They'll have to respect the law. And it's like, that's the whole point about it being fluid. It's all convenient. It's called selective ethics or selective morality. That is the new thing in business and even in the world. And I'll tell you that you can't have selective morality and selective ethics in business as a Christian. Do not do it. Do not do it in any part of your life. The Bible says specifically to avoid partiality. And it says when you are partial or biased or skewed or, you know, unbalanced, whatever you want to call it, it says that you're rewarding the wicked and punishing the righteous. That's what partiality is, because it's not fair and it's not honest and it's not upfront. It's not seeking truth. And that is what our country is suffering. Our country has the influenza of progressivism now. It's infiltrated us in a huge, massive way. So, you know, I was reading all this stuff about Jane Fonda and all this, you know, just madness. And I won't even give her the time. You know, the abuse of civil stuff. I've got some more overview stuff. There's just a bunch of stuff. Here's another thing I got. Close this out. Okay. The fact of the matter is there's this one article. It's kind of a gross analogy, but it says, you know, the world is being taken over by maggots. America is a corpse being consumed by maggots. Liberals are rooting for the maggots. Conservatives are rooting for the corpse. And then, you know, so for the last 150 years, our political life has been the exclusive preserve of what they call a duopoly. Okay, I mean, it's a bipartisan system. George Washington, all of our early fathers were terrified of it. It formed rapidly. They were super troubled because of the what? Left. The left started to create you know, solidarity, and they wanted to, you know, tear America apart, and they wanted to impose all these garbage things, you know, that just weren't even legit on our country, that were basically in complete contradiction. There were times that people were thrown out of Congress for treason, the people would rise up, etc. And it says that the duopoly of Democrats and Republicans, and, you know, some say it's evil versus stupid or whatever. And if something's both evil and stupid, it's called bipartisan, you know. In other words, if they agree on anything, it's evil and stupid. I'm sorry, I didn't write this, but I was just reading it from this guy. So the familiar evil-stupid dichotomy doesn't even begin to describe the descent into the national dysfunction and galloping irrationality that characterizes this Trump impeachment hysteria. The media chatter now centers on the nuts and bolts questions of what's next. Will House, you know, Speaker Nancy Pelosi send the articles of impeachment over to the Senate? Yes, even one of the legal scholars enrolled in the impeachment lynch mob avers that Trump isn't actually impeached until the Senate receives the articles. So who will be the trial managers? Who cares? That's what Nancy Pelosi keeps asking. Will there be a real trial with witnesses? No, because it's not a real trial. And it doesn't even matter because it's a farce. It's a mob lynching. Will Trump be removed? Absolutely not. It says here, unlikely unless some bolt from the blue flips 20 GOP senators, which ain't happening. So will impeachment be the Democrats' albatross going into the elections November 2020? Most polls show independents are becoming more and more turned off by this, but there's still a year to go. And with 24/7 news, folks, we've got a short-term memory problem. None of these questions, which are meaningful, only in a mental universe of the evils and the stupid shadow boxing over bipartisan allocation of political spoils, touch upon the grim and occasionally sardonic symptoms of America's seemingly unstoppable terminal slide. You hear that? America's seemingly unstoppable terminal slide. Unstoppable terminal means deadly. Slide. With Trump's impeachment, it's time to say goodbye to yesteryear's team evil and team stupid and say hello in 2020 to team maggot and team corpse. I mean, this is gross. I'm sorry, but it's got a good point. You know, so this is, you know, I could go on and on. This article just goes on and on and on and on and on and on. And it's actually very insightful. But the fact of the matter is that politics is so dirty and it's been so divisive to the history of this nation. In the past 50 years, okay, the destruction of the American family, I was scribbling down some notes. Here's what we've seen change in the last 50 years of this country. The destruction, and this is all by design. I mean, this is just since 1970. 50 years is just 1970, folks. I mean, that's not that far away. That is post-60s. The 60s really ushered in this era of madness. And that's really when there was, you know, the Frankfurt School took root and started to have major impacts on politics and getting all this freedom of religion or freedom from religion and things cast out. The ultimate act was in 1964, I believe, when the Federalist Papers were formally removed from documents that the Supreme Court could review when determining a case, when ruling on a case. Then when I was young, the big game was, well, we don't understand the intent of the fathers. We don't know what they meant. Then we started to just lean. I mean, that was already going on, but we just started leaning on precedent law. What happened before? What did a judge rule before? That's why sometimes the FDA will go after people and destroy their lives for stupid things so they can get control over some chemical in your kitchen. And I've seen that happen on a personal basis, not to me, but to someone I knew, where they didn't, you know, of course, handle it properly and they didn't have good counsel and whatever, but they do that stuff on purpose. It's about control. So if you go back to 1970, and let's talk about what's happened in America and think about the relevance from a spiritual perspective. We have, I said, number one, the destruction of the American family. I was probably one of the last generations when kids ate with their families every night. You'd have dinner, family dinner, most of the time. In a healthy family, it was a really good thing. In an unhealthy family, it was a really good thing because it created the bond, the sense of belonging, the sense of accountability and responsibility. Hey, Tommy, did you do your homework today? You know, are you going to do it tonight? What's going on at school? Hey, and then she'll say, oh, you know, today, you know, this kid hit me and I had this trouble and, you know, or whatever. You know, they can get their problems out on the table. A good parent can stimulate thought with their kids. Get them thinking. Get them talking. Get them thinking right. These are the times that you have the greatest influence on your kids' spiritual and political beliefs. The Kennedys, who are very, very liberal, espouse this in a huge way. They claim that their family tradition has been to ask incredibly intellectually challenging questions at their dinner table. And so although I don't agree with their politics, although if we went back to 64 when JFK was assassinated, I would love him as president now. He'd be one of our best Republicans because we've gone so far to the left. And then we went to Ted Kennedy, who was a radical kook, and we've seen a bunch of Kennedys pass away and whatnot. But they, in general, are, you know, they develop their dynasty over the dinner table. The second thing I wrote, the politicization of our school systems. We have our kids in school learning excessive amounts of liberal arts. In the last 50 years, the Department of Education was formed in 1974, okay? That's when our federal government took over. What else was happening right before that? The U.S. Federal Highway Project, interstates, I-90, I-5, all this, in the 60s. This, and we had the hippie movement in the 60s. And we had hippies getting into government in the 60s and the 70s. So we had the highway program, where the federal government poured tons of money into states to build highways. They gave them huge budgets, you know, and that gave leverage because now you need money to maintain those things. And now if you want our money to maintain those things, you're going to have to follow along. You're going to have to obey. Just like a 501c3 that Obama's Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, was shutting down every 501c3 that had application, that had a conservative or spiritual conservative lean. And if you don't know what a 501c3 is, it's when you're a nonprofit that people can write off their donations as a charitable gift. Churches go out and often get 501c3s. Luckily, there's a gray area in the tax law where you can write off, at least up until now, you can still write off donations to a church that are under a 501c3. But there are certain organizations that want to give to churches that can only do so if they are a 501c3 for the tax deductibility. That's also where control starts to be handed over to the corporation. Corporations, big companies can control big churches, things like that. The other thing the 501c3 does is it puts pretty harsh restrictions on the church. Once they obtain a 501c3, they're supposedly not allowed to discuss anything political from the pulpit. They can't preach politics. Do you think politics and religion have anything in common? No, they don't. They have everything in common. And so we've seen the politicization of our school system, the brainwashing development, which is extraordinarily socialistic. Okay, we've seen the demise of the family. I hate to say it, folks, just fact. Nuclear families have fallen apart. Divorce rates are up. Single mothers are, you know, all over. Mixed families are everywhere. You know, in surveys done about in 2014 and 15, kids in general from 1974 to 2014, which was probably 40 years, there was like a 78% decrease and families meeting for dinner and getting together, you know, at any time. And a lot of these kids grow up, they go to school, they come home, they're all alone. They're called, you know, latchkey kids or whatever. Their parents are both working. Their parents come home. They're burnt out. They throw a TV dinner or whatever cheap food they can get in the oven. You know, they've already eaten or they're going to eat, and the kids already ate, and the kids will eat later, and the kids are eating junk, and they're eating pizza pockets, and they're sitting in the room playing video games, getting their brain fried by this absolute horrendous garbage that trashes the brain that is also forming our society. Another thing that's really become prevalent in the last 50 years, the drugging of America, okay? From street drugs, pharmaceuticals, and manufacturing chemicals. Now, you kind of have to preface that because there's been a drug issue in this nation going all the way back. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Reefer Madness that was put out by our government in the 1930s. There was, I think, Calvin Coolidge. I can't remember which president it was. His family owned the big cotton fields, biggest cotton company in America. Hemp was coming in. Hemp's a better product. They got mad. They said, okay, we're going to associate hemp with pot, and the two are not the same. And they put out this absolute propaganda video showing people using marijuana and freaking out, becoming completely immoral, and eventually killing each other and lying, and guys that are using it are so spaced out they don't know what happened. You know, it's just an absolute scare tactic. That's, at least to my knowledge, when the really hardcore scare tactics came in on drugs. And when things go to such an extreme, people know, kids know, they're like, that can't be that bad. I mean, I know people that do it, and they're not like that. And so then they basically disregard everything they're being taught. Then over time, you get the Joseph Goebbels effect, the tell a lie long enough and everybody will believe it. Now we're convinced drugs are the biggest enemy in this country. Now, they are, but it's not always the drugs we think. It's the drugs in the system. I mean, I was reading an article the other day about a guy who had he was in jail with his third strike for possession of marijuana in a state that was hardcore on it, California. They just had harsher laws. This kid, guy now, was caught for possession of marijuana 3 times over an ounce. Life. Now marijuana is legal in California, and they're not letting these people out. Does that make sense? They say, oh, you broke the law at the time when it was illegal. Now it's legal, so you still have to pay for when it was illegal. And I'm not, folks, I am not proponent of any of this stuff. I am an opponent of big government abuse. They have to spend the money. They have to have the money. They've got to create a need for themselves. And then now with the legalization of marijuana, it's put a damper on the DEA. There's a lot of stuff they can't do now. They've got, you know, more restrictions. They obviously can't. They've had to retrain all their drug sniffing dogs in the airports because they're no longer looking for marijuana. You know, it's just been a big change. So, but the real drugging of America, the real crime is coming from pharmaceutical companies. They make drugs that they know destroy lives. They make drugs that they know are highly addictive, and they hide it. They hide all their drug studies. You had Pfizer coming up a while ago with, like, you know, 538 lawsuits nationwide, and they were settling one after the next. And finally, they went to a judge for an injunction to say, look, we can't do this. The total of all the lawsuits was like thousands of times more than the entire asset base of the corporation. Okay, so where's the problem? Yeah, the corporations are allowed. And when I was in the South Pacific here a while ago, I ran into a guy at a very decent resort who was a specialist in heading up all these statistical studies and doing all the, you know, the calculations. My background's statistics, and doing all the, you know, the probabilities and running all the numbers and crunching all the likelihoods and the outcomes and all that stuff for major, major pharmaceutical companies. And he and I had the same conversation. He said, it's horrible. He does this. It's horrible. These pharmaceutical companies run their own studies. First of all, they have to pay the FDA $500,000. Well, maybe more now. That was in the 90s. Probably $1 million or more now just to run a study. whether the study succeeds or fails, okay? Then the pharmaceutical company has to perform all their own studies, and they have to have an independent individual hired to look over this and that. Well, don't you think if you're spending $1 million or $1.5 million on a drug just to study it, and then you've got all of the R&D costs, research and development, you've got all the employees, you've got all this stuff, don't you think you might be a little bit biased? Just a tad bit motivated to make sure it works out. Don't you think when you're hiring that independent person to, you know, to review certain items and certain data, that he might be a little bit bought off? I think so. So these pharmaceutical companies are putting out drugs that destroy our lives. They're terrible. They've all got so many side effects, it's not even funny. They're poison. The history of the drug laws in America is really went crazy in the 30s because we needed a common enemy. And we had politicians that are using the government to line their families' pockets. That goes all the way back in time. That's nothing new. You can find that in good old Rome and Greece and everywhere else. All these politicians, they go into office with nothing and they come out with everything. One last thing on the pharmaceuticals. George Bush, I hate to admit it, but true fact. He wrote the prescription bill, whatever it was. It's been a while. I forgot, Medicare prescription bill. Now, at the time, this was a lot of money. $385 billion that he gave to Pfizer and Merck, basically. I'm sure there were some other beneficiaries. In return, when he got out of office, he got an honorary board member position on both pharmaceutical companies. He only had to show up for one meeting a year for like an hour or two. And he got hundreds of thousands of shares of stock options. So when he got out these stock options, he had an honorary board member position, unpaid. He had stock options, unowned. And so he could reap the benefits of these stock options to an unbelievable level. Everyone thinks they're all so great and they see it's okay. And you know, you got Biden and you got Obama now worth $60, $70 million. He went into office worth nothing. The Clintons went in worth nothing. And now they've got over $300 million and they're livid because they couldn't get more. And they're so corrupt. So the drugging of America is a problem. But it's the pharmaceutical companies and it's the government system that's causing the problem. And then because of that system, it makes it lucrative for drug cartels around the world to ship drugs to our streets. Because of all of the regulations and controls, it makes it the supply low and the demand high. Number four, the destruction of small business, family business, and new barriers to grassroots entrepreneurs. Obviously, that's a no-brainer, right? I just discussed a little bit ago, all these big companies are taking over. You want fascism? They're almost there. When you get Amazon, who controls 50% of online retail, and he's a radical left-winger, and then he's out buying major, major newspapers, the Washington Post and whatever else, and he's got the whole internet, and they're influencing opinion and politics continuously. That's fascism. Now, it's a new kind of fascism. Fascism was where the government's involved. You know, Venezuela with Chavez, and we had Indonesia where they seized the world's largest caterpillar production plant in the world years back. You know what happened with that? He gave it to his son, gave it to his son, the biggest caterpillar heavy equipment manufacturing operation in the world. Bankrupt. Why? They didn't have any support from Caterpillar General. I don't know what they were thinking. Like, they thought that they'd have some leverage over the American and Canadian pockets of Caterpillar. No such luck. They got shut down. They basically got cold shouldered. The Caterpillar got a hold of, you know, every other import company and said, don't import one piece for a Caterpillar into that country. So this is what fascism does. It takes businesses and destroys them. Gold Reserve out of Spokane, Washington, was digging in what was supposed to be the first or second richest hill on earth behind the Comstock Lode and the Berkeley Pit. They invest unfathomable amounts of investors' money. They get it all ready to go. All the equipment's down there. They wait till, you know, the lights are on and the mining begins, and Chavez comes in and seizes it the entire mountain and their equipment and throws them out. Basically bankrupts Gold Reserve. I mean, they may still be limping along now, but it hit them hard. That's fascism. And what happened to that mine? It just piddles. It doesn't work because it's not free market enterprise. It's not grassroots entrepreneurship. That's what works in America. And when we get all these companies coming in and doing this massive thing, you can't have a little mom and pop grocery shop and compete with Winco or Costco. Now, Costco's not as bad because Costco sells a lot of stuff to these small mom and pop shops and these restaurants. You'd be surprised how many restaurants get a lot of their food, their pre-cooked food from Costco. It's a ton. So Costco's different. But Amazon's, Google's, Walmart's. Walmart's not. Walmart is just a huge junk store. And the fact of the matter is, folks, I mean, yeah, they're supposed to be red-blooded American and their prices are better, but you know, they've actually affected the pricing in America drastically. Things that are just, you can't even fathom how much stuff costs. I mean, just junky coffee makers, $39.97. That used to be $9.99. On and on. So we got small businesses going down. I happen to be a small business, not going down because I'm a destination location. But, you know, there is the internet. That without the internet, you just get disconnected from the world. Everybody just hops on the computer. They invest, they buy, they sell, they do everything online. Number five, the destruction of savings and the conversion to a lifestyle of debt. And that's just simply put. People have very little to no savings anymore. We've gotten into an extraordinarily high lifestyle of debt and consumerism. People are racking up credit cards all the time. You know, folks, you think about it. If the Federal Reserve wants people on debt, which they do, it starts out in 1913. There was virtually very little debt. And then we get the Federal Reserve Act. Now we start to hyperinflate, but we make money easy. We make getting loans easy. So everybody starts getting them. Rates are low. Feed the system. What do we get? The roaring 20s. Probably one of the most prosperous times and truly prosperous times in American history. I love the roaring 20s. Go back and study the clothing and the equipment and the cars they built. You know, there's so many cars they built, you don't even know of them. There's hundreds of different models because of brands that you've never heard of. They're beautiful. They're incredible because of entrepreneurialism. And then we get the crash of 29 orchestrated by the Fed. All part of the big game. Now what happens? We got everybody on debt. Now their currency collapsed. Their stock market collapsed. And they don't have jack. And they can't pay their bills. Beware, folks. This is coming again. We are consuming amounts of cash now that are so far beyond. I heard Bernie Sanders today blabbing about inflation's 1.1%, which is terrible. Well, that's not terrible. That's stupid to even say. He doesn't even know what he's talking about. They're trying to rash on Trump, and they don't even know how. Because they can't harsh on him, excuse me, or criticize him for the things that they would do themselves, like the fact that Trump's racking up more debt than any president's ever dreamt of, even Obama. He's not even looking at it. He's just got that checkbook running, and that ticker tape is shooting out of a gun. You know, he's just pumping the cash out like crazy. You know, and they can't, the left can't come after it. They can't tell us about it because it's what they would do too. It's all, both sides of the fence are just messed up and guilty. So the debt kills. The Bible says the debtor is servant to the lender. Remember that. Debt's not good. There's times I've said in the past to use it. You use it to leverage profitability and assets, okay? You need a house now in America, you got to have debt. Interest rates are reasonable, to put it lightly. You know, there's ways you can have debt. Problem is, what's happened? The price of real estate's gone through the roof. Why? To make it commensurate with the actual inflation rate payment. So when I was down in banking back in the 90s and rates were 12 and 11 and then they went to 10, and then I remember when they broke 10 going down to 9 and I thought, oh my gosh, bar the door, this is like free money, 9%, 9.75 on a mortgage. What happens is those rates go lower, the price of the real estate goes higher, And because people are buying on payments and the payments stay the same based on their budget. Because regardless of what inflation does, the system's set up to lie to us because they've removed food, transportation, real estate, and energy costs. So people don't get a raise commensurate with true inflation. Now you have houses in Spokane that in the 90s were $135,000 or $138,000, now going for $400,000. How can a couple afford $400,000? You know, the only way that they can do it is they got to come in with a – and then there's PMI. I don't even have time to get into all this right now. But you get, you know, if you finance $380,000 at 4% on 30 years, it's $1,800 a month. Now, that's not the worst. You know, then you got to add on taxes and insurance. That's not the worst. But the problem is now that the house prices are so high, it's just one more reason interest rates can't increase because we're so tapped, we're so throttled, we're at artificial zero, they call it. It's ridiculous. There's nowhere to turn, nowhere to hide. These things pop. They can't hold themselves steady. Profitability diminishes, bad debt increases, and eventually you've got problems. You've got banks that say, we can't do it. You'll have another big bailout. It'll continue the way it's gone in the past. I say, prepare yourself. Folks, just you should have a very nice, solid portfolio, precious metals based. We're very good at it. We like semi-numismatic stuff. We've got a lot of silver dollars. We recently bought a very impressive hoard. We have a lot of old uncirculated rolls of silver dollars from the 1800s, and I mean uncirculated, at unprecedented prices because everybody's in the stock market. The prices are ridiculously inexpensive. Along that line, Morgans. You want a Morgan? Go to Google, give us a nice 5-star review based on experience. We'll give you a nice Morgan silver dollar. You want 2 Morgan silver dollars? Give us 3 good reviews. Do, you know, Google, Yahoo, Yelp, Bing, I don't know. There's other ones out there I can't think of right now, but, you know, do it. Just get out there and do 3. Call. We'll verify. Don't expect us to read your mind. We've had people do it and call and get mad at us because we didn't send them a coin. You've got to let us know, and we've got to verify it. We can't read minds. We're good, but we're not that good. Okay? So we got destruction of savings and the conversion to the lifestyle of debt. So people are broke and they're borrowing money. I got to wrap this up. We've got the intimidation, corruption, and takeover of the mainstream media. Man, I wish I had more time. If that ain't the biggest problem we've got right now, there isn't one. Everybody I talk to, left or right, I'm like, oh, this is crazy. What's going on with Trump? And it's, you know, the left. And everybody says, and it's wisdom. They're like, it's the media. It's the media. And they are so right. Left, wrong. They're left wrong. They're bad. You got CNN lies, just spewing lies. I had a list I was going to go over of 107 major media errors from 2019. And I thought, that'll get kind of annoying. But I mean, that's that bad. Just filled with lies. Fake news. Trump calls it fake news and he nailed it on the head. Trump is the light that is illuminating the sin of this nation. Let us hope and pray that this is going to work out as a wonderful thing for purging America. Maybe we'll all wake up, sign up to vote. I'll quit listening to Christians say, well, you know, I didn't vote because I don't like either candidate. And, you know, it's like you need to get out and vote against the bad guy. Get the bad guys out. You know, you're not going to agree with every candidate. Vote against the bad one. Help America out. Number 7, the growth of bureaucracy into an unelected fourth branch of government that through their self-decreed regulations, often unconstitutional, has more impact on our lives and freedoms than the original 3 branches. That's the growth of bureaucracy. That's big government, big corporations, people with power. You know, you get the EPA, you get all these three-letter alphabet soup companies that are destroying our lives. They're not part of the Constitution. They're made as czars, if you will. They're bad. They're evil. They're not meant to be. They're destroying America's freedom. This is a country of freedom. Number 8, maybe the end of citizen statesmen and the rise of the corrupt career political class. We don't have our citizens representing us anymore. We have representative politicians that represent themselves and could care less about us. All they care about, they'll lie their teeth through their teeth just to get reelected. Welcome to America, folks. We're in an unfree society. 2020 may be the pivot year that determines whether we can ever recover a free society or move unstoppably to the world that was portrayed in the novels 1984 and Atlas Shrugged. That's where we're at. Thanks for tuning in. This is the last show of the year. Happy New Year, okay? Make some good financial decisions. Call us. Let us take care of you. God bless and have a wonderful New Year. Thank you. Bye-bye.